Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, November 13th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Becoming a landlord might be the best way to afford a home. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the latest snapshot of inflation is out today, and it will likely impact the actions of the Fed. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG. In Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. The CPI rising 0.2% in the month of October. That's the same as September. Year over year, that's 2.6%, but core CPI still a little higher and a little stickier compared to the overall figure.
Yes, we did see a little bit higher core CPI, and that was expected as well. So that's why the markets are still pretty comfortable with the idea that the Fed will do another quarter point in December. And I think the Fed will actually do another quarter point in December. The biggest issue, I think, for shoppers out there is that we've seen some offsets. There were some things from Hurricane Milton, everything from hotel room rates to airfares to also the price of oranges went up quite dramatically because a lot of orange orchards were actually destroyed by Hurricane Milton. So there were some effects of that. Once we get into the non-durable goods, excluding food, these are the things most people spend their Christmas items on. We've had 2 months in a row of declines on a year-over-year basis in those prices. Finally, actual declines, price declines out there, something consumers have really been waiting for and not been getting as much of. This is the most we've seen in terms of deflation, actually, in some of those holiday items prior to the holiday season since the fall of 2020 when we had the Delta wave resurgence and the economy nearly tipped into a recession. The U.S. consumer is poised to power through much better than it did back then. It's got a nice tailwind of still significant savings behind it to be able to spend during the holiday season, but they're going to be spending with more discounts, and I think that's important as well.
It's timely we're having this conversation, especially about inflation, because a lot of the exit polls indicate that inflation really did inform millions of votes in last week's election. And it seems the two categories in which voters did cast a ballot with their wallet in mind was the cumulative price increase in groceries and the cumulative price increase in rents and housing. And what can be done from a Federal Reserve standpoint to not only bring those figures down or at least get them to level off, and also get them out of the forefront of the voters' minds? Because even though inflation is leveling off, people are still dealing with the psychological effects of it.
No question about it. And in fact, we had a record number of elections globally in 2024, and a record number of incumbents lost power in those elections for those very reasons, inflation being the number one reason across the board, across the globe. Certainly, voters don't care what the reasons for inflation are and that it was global in scope. They don't care that everyone felt pain. They care about their own wallets. And I think Chairman Powell was really good in explaining this when he was asked this question and posed it at the press conference following the last Fed meeting, and that was that it takes a lot of time for people to feel like they've regained the ground lost, and even though wages have been outpacing the pace of inflation for some time now, there still is a lot of room to go in terms of regaining ground lost. For instance, even prices at the gasoline pump, they are much lower and have fallen quite a bit, but they're up a third from what they were in February of 2020. And so you can really understand why these cumulative effects take so long to undo, even as their wages, which are only reset oftentimes once a year, as their wages reset at a pace that's faster inflation, it takes time to have that really follow through and have you feel like you're regaining ground lost rather than just treading water at best.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
If you're having trouble coming up with the money for a home, there's a hack that may help. Let's learn about it from Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Development Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today. And that hack is becoming a landlord. And that is another case of what was once old is now new again.
Absolutely, Rob. Thanks for having me again. This is something that is an older trend, an older thing that was done, and now more folks are doing it because finding those houses today with the market being what it is and the inventory being down, it's difficult. So what these folks are doing is they're kind of taking in a landlord or tenant and finding themselves an opportunity to, you know, buy a house and help in sharing the cost.
Now, this is something that if you look at two flats across Chicago, this used to be common practice where the person would buy the building and then the family would live in maybe the upper unit or the lower unit and then rent the other one out and then use the rent to defray the cost. But if you get into the landlord business, Drew, you should probably know that you're on the hook for every maintenance problem your tenant may have.
Oh, that's so very true. I lived that. My grandparents were definitely those folks that did that, so I know that firsthand. But yeah, you know, you are needing to know how to, you know, fix a toilet. You're going to need to collect the rent, and you know, if it's family, hopefully it's easier. Not always the truth, but it you know, you are playing that landlord. So you know, they're going to call you and let you know when things are broken, and that's going to be your responsibility. But you can defer that cost because you know they're paying rent and they're offsetting your mortgage and they're offsetting the price of taxes and things like that. So it's give and take.
And also, if you were the landlord of a building, you talk about maintenance costs and really addressing all the maintenance issues that your tenant may have, you can write those off your taxes, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And sometimes there's value, too, in hiring a property manager. Like, if you don't want to do it, you can be the owner and you can hire a property manager and, you know, minimize that stress and time for you and just pay a property manager.
Now, this is interesting because when I was closing on my first house, I was just, you know, making chit chat with the real estate agent. And he was talking about like, well, if you want to save money for college, you know, buy your house and then buy a condo and rent the condo out. And once you're done with the condo, you can sell it and then pay for use the proceeds to pay for your child's education. And I was thinking, slow down, buddy. I'm closing on my first home here. This is advanced math. This is doctorate level stuff. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, what if I did that back then? How much would that hypothetical condo be worth today? But you really have to be in it to take care of everything. And it seems like a lot of people may find that getting that broken toilet call at 3 o'clock in the morning, that just may not be for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the doctorate in toilet care is really what we're talking about here, because realistically, like you just said, you know, people are either cut out to do this or they're not. This isn't for everybody. You know, the investor mind will allow you to buying these homes, and it creates generational wealth, especially if you're doing it with family. You can put your family in that house, save them or give them the opportunity to have home ownership and that they're in this, because you know, you're saving money and you're going to be able to buy a house with what, you know, you're saving from your monthly payments and things. So it really does work well to, you know, push this thing out and buy future investment properties and rental properties to be able to do this. So it's being done a lot more frequently than you think.
And then lastly, when it comes to tax advantages or disadvantages, who gets to write off the value of the mortgage when tax time comes around?
that's always going to be the owner of the building. So the renter is not going to be able to write off the mortgage. It would be the owner of that building. So if you own it and you're renting it out to family, you get that tax deduction for the interest on that mortgage and then the taxes that you pay on it as well.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Development Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll introduce you to a restaurant chain that's being called the Chipotle of Mediterranean food.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
If you're having trouble coming up with the money for a home, there's a hack that may help. Let's learn about it from Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Development Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today. And that hack is becoming a landlord. And that is another case of what was once old is now new again.
Absolutely, Rob. Thanks for having me again. This is something that is an older trend, an older thing that was done, and now more folks are doing it because finding those houses today with the market being what it is and the inventory being down, it's difficult. So what these folks are doing is they're kind of taking in a landlord or tenant and finding themselves an opportunity to, you know, buy a house and help in sharing the cost.
Now, this is something that if you look at two flats across Chicago, this used to be common practice where the person would buy the building and then the family would live in maybe the upper unit or the lower unit and then rent the other one out and then use the rent to defray the cost. But if you get into the landlord business, Drew, you should probably know that you're on the hook for every maintenance problem your tenant may have.
Oh, that's so very true. I lived that. My grandparents were definitely those folks that did that, so I know that firsthand. But yeah, you know, you are needing to know how to, you know, fix a toilet. You're going to need to collect the rent, and you know, if it's family, hopefully it's easier. Not always the truth, but it, you know, you are playing that landlord. So you know, they're going to call you and let you know when things are broken, and that's going to be your responsibility. But you can defer that cost because you know they're paying rent and they're offsetting your mortgage and they're offsetting the price of taxes and things like that. So it's a give and take.
And also, if you were the landlord of a building, you talk about maintenance costs and really addressing all the maintenance issues that your tenant may have, you can write those off your taxes, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And sometimes there's value, too, in hiring a property manager. Like, if you don't want to do it, you can be the owner and you can hire a property manager and, you know, minimize that stress and time for you and just pay a property manager.
Now, this is interesting because when I was closing on my first house, I was just, you know, making chit chat with the real estate agent. And he was talking about like, well, if you want to save money for college, you know, buy your house and then buy a condo and rent the condo out. And once you're done with the condo, you can sell it and then pay for use the proceeds to pay for your child's education. And I was thinking, slow down, buddy. I'm closing on my first home here. This is advanced math. This is doctorate level stuff. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, what if I did that back then? How much would that hypothetical condo be worth today? But you really have to be in it to take care of everything. And it seems like a lot of people may find that getting that broken toilet call at 3 o'clock in the morning, that just may not be for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the doctorate in toilet care is really what we're talking about here, because realistically, like you just said, you know, people are either cut out to do this or they're not. This isn't for everybody. You know, the investor mind will allow you to buying these homes, and it creates generational wealth, especially if you're doing it with family. You can put your family in that house, save them or give them the opportunity to have home ownership and that they're in this, because you know, you're saving money and you're going to be able to buy a house with what, you know, you're saving from your monthly payments and things. So it really does work well to, you know, push this thing out and buy future investment properties and rental properties to be able to do this. So it's being done a lot more frequently than you think.
And then lastly, when it comes to tax advantages or disadvantages, who gets to write off the value of the mortgage when tax time comes around?
That's always going to be the owner of the building. So the renter is not going to be able to write off the mortgage. It would be the owner of that building. So if you own it and you're renting it out to family, you get that tax deduction for the interest on that mortgage and then the taxes that you pay on it as well.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Development Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll introduce you to a restaurant chain that's being called the Chipotle of Mediterranean food.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Shares of the fast casual restaurant chain Cava are higher today after a better-than-expected earnings report. Let's discuss their success with Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And Cava is described as the Chipotle of Mediterranean food, and that's a pretty interesting analogy because occasionally your man or woman can only have enough guacamole and tortillas, and so you want to switch it up every now and then. You want to incorporate some lamb, maybe some falafel, maybe some hummus into your life, and that is the secret to Cava's success.
I agree with you. It is the secret to their success. And, you know, the fact that they're doing this fresh Mediterranean, at least more perceived healthy cuisine, is a direct competitor to Chipotle. And, you know, this is just it's generational. I mean, this generation is driving towards, fast casual type of foods. And the restaurants are stepping up and Cava's done a nice job.
It also seems like the secret to success in any fast casual environment is the portability of the food itself. I mean, you could put a burrito inside the giant pillow tortilla, or you can put it in a bowl and carry it back to your office and back to your desk. And it seems like anything involving pita bread operates on the same principle.
Yeah, and that's a great point because I went out to a restaurant not too long ago and brought home the food, and the French fries were soggy, a lot of those things. And Cava, I mean, the presentation that they have in the bowls and in the pita bread, those are things that travel well, hold well when you take the top off, when you get back to work. You know, the salad and the steak and the harissa salad, all those things are top of the line. And, yeah, you don't have to eat avocado and everything that you get.
And also in Cava's footprint, is this a business that is taking advantage of the fact that people don't work at the office in a central business district 5 days a week anymore, and that you can spread the locations around a city, around residential areas, around suburbs, because someone who's working from home, they're going to need something once 12 o'clock hits?
Yeah, and this, you know, certainly their bowls fall into that category as being a great, you know, lunch presentation, filling travel wells. But you're also hitting on something else that, you know, Cava is looking at, and that is moving into retail, coming up with products that they're going to be putting into stores. So they're thinking the same way you are. It's not just about being in a city anymore.
Is the Mediterranean category also a growth category in fast casual? Because you do have Cava, but there are pita in locations throughout the Chicago area. So clearly, this is a type of food that has an audience and that you'd like to put your money behind.
Absolutely. But the difference, you know, between the two, I mean, Cava really is nationally strong. They're going to really have a big rollout. And you'll see them all over the country, and they're being very aggressive about it. They're acquiring Zoe's Kitchen, they'll be acquiring some other things, and then, you know, they're going to have their whole line of retail products. So they're really going to be out there in a big way.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago, talking about the success of the Mediterranean restaurant chain Cava. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, dealing with the financial fallout from divorce.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests.
Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Biden and President-elect Trump meet at the White House. Nurses at a Chicago hospital are walking picket lines for the second time in 3 months. In personal finance Wednesday, the impact of divorce on budgets, credit scores, and even retirement. The price of gas has fallen below $3 a gallon in some places. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 174 points. The NASDAQ is up 57, and the S&P 500 is up 21. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, mainly cloudy and breezy, some rain late near and south of I-80, and a high today at 53. 50 right now in Chicago under cloudy skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, America's current president has welcomed his predecessor and his successor to the White House.
President Biden pledged to ensure a smooth transfer of power to the new administration.
Like we said, smooth transition. Do everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, what you need.
President-elect Trump was grateful.
A transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get, and I very much appreciate that, Jim.
Discussions between the two expected to cover not only the transition, but President Biden's views on foreign policy, including the war in Ukraine and peace in the Middle East. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
Nurses at a University of Illinois hospital in Chicago are on strike. It's the second time they've walked out since August when their previous contract expired. UI Health posts on its website that it may be in contact with some patients to reschedule procedures and appointments. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist of B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the post-election party continues on Wall Street, and the CPI report did not drop anything unpleasant in the metaphorical punch bowl.
Yeah, very nice recap there. I would say we had a nice five-day rally, interrupted yesterday by a little bit of a pause in markets, and we're back to rally mode today, with all three of the major indices moving higher, and the Russell 2000 small caps, which have actually outperformed post-election on a month-to-date basis, the S&P 500. And I think there's a lot of arguments for the small caps in what will be a new administration that likely sees a little less regulatory touch and certainly a better yield curve steepness. And I think all of that in a world where most of the small caps are domestically focused. So, yeah, we've seen some intuitive moves over the course of the last 5 or 6 days. Today continues to be that. When we look at the leadership, it certainly seems to be some of those groups that might have a lighter regulatory touch, like healthcare and financials.
As far as equities are concerned, is that the trend through January 20th, pending some sort of outside event, that investors will just spend the next 2 months dreaming of low taxes?
Yeah, I think that's basically it. Now, I'd say any given year, the months of November and December are generally positive. This is the start of a six-month trend that's pretty positive for markets historically, and it's even more so post an election. So we're in that time frame where the calendar is favorable. We've got earnings that came in pretty strong, and we had economic growth that continues to be north of mean, and we have a Fed that's cutting interest rates. So all of that sort of paints a pretty rosy picture for equities here.
On the other hand, the bond market is telling a different story, because you have equities which are roaring, but the 10-year yield is now at almost 4.5%, and that is almost one full percentage point higher than where we were 2 months ago. So what signal is the bond market sending?
Well, I think it's signaling two things, Rob. First and foremost, I think it's a signal that we have robust economic growth. And that's generally what the 10-year likes to manifest. I think the other piece of the puzzle, though, is that the 10-year is sniffing out the potential for higher inflation if all of the fiscal stimulus gets put into place over the course of next year. Inflation may start to rear its ugly head again. So both of those things aren't mutually exclusive in the short-term reflective nature of the 10-year yield, moving up some 75 basis points since the Fed cut rates in September.
And then when investors try to suss out policy, what the new administration is going to do, how far into the weeds of the political math do they get? Because you have a Republican Senate with a fairly healthy, by the standards of 2024, a healthy majority of three seats, but a razor thin majority for the Republicans in the U.S. House, especially if a couple of Republican members are selected for President-elect Trump's cabinet. So with those majorities in place, with it almost being 50-50 on both sides of the Capitol building, does that change how sweeping a tax reform measure would be? Or do you even think in those terms at this stage of the game?
Yeah, I would tell you that's exactly correct. And I think that when you think about what gets said on the campaign trail versus what actually comes to fruition, it's oftentimes a couple of different things. Even if you have the majority in both the House and the Senate, that doesn't mean you have the majority of the majority thinking the same way you are and willing to make decisions that their constituents might not agree with, whether it's on fiscal policy and tax cuts or whether it's on tariffs. And both of those things are potential negatives, inflationary and bad for economic growth, especially tariffs. But the ability to get sweeping tariffs passed is legislative. When you do it surgically one country at a time, that's much more of an executive order type thing. So to the extent that I think investors are looking at this and saying, yes, we've said a lot of things on the campaign trail, not all of them will be put into place, certainly not in the first 100 days.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to lessen the financial impact of divorce.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're looking at the ways divorce can impact multiple parts of your finances. Let's discuss strategy with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And for those of us who may be just familiar with celebrity divorces, I mean, for example, I'm really looking forward to reading the upcoming Johnny Carson biography, but he was famous for having very expensive and acrimonious divorce proceedings from former Mrs. Carsons. We don't have that luxury, though, if we find ourselves at the heartbreaking point of the end of a marriage to have all the money in the world to wage a divorce battle and hire the most expensive attorneys out there. So I would imagine the biggest expense you would face if you're actually ending a marriage is hiring an attorney.
Definitely. And it doesn't always have to be that way. I mean, you definitely want an attorney to do the documents. But if you can do as much as the negotiation ahead of time, figuring out dividing the assets, custody, things like that, if you can kind of come up with a list and then meet with an attorney, I think you'll save money. There's also mediators. You can meet with a financial planner. There's a lot of independent people out there that can help.
And if both parties are, it's not an acrimonious split. Both parties just understand this cannot be sustained, and they go about it in a very pragmatic way and not an emotional way. You could save a lot of money along the way.
Definitely. And I sometimes meet with clients before they start all the proceedings, and they almost end up where we discussed at the beginning. So, you know, there's a lot of egos that get into place. There's a lot of things that get very emotional. But if you can take the emotions out and just get the divorce done and move on, I think both parties are happy. And usually I see when the divorce is final and the parties move on, they are much more peace of mind and much happier.
What elements of a divorce could have the greatest impact on your finances?
Yeah, so, you know, my advice when people get divorced, it's now you, and it's time for you to take a step back and look at your values and what's important to you. You may have less resources than you had before, so a budget is definitely in order, trying to figure out what's most important to you and where you want to spend the money. You also want to look at your credit score. You know, you were with someone before, you want to make sure that you actually have good credit, and it's a good time to double check. There is a lot of cyber security out there, and it's a good way to check your credit. You also will most likely receive assets as part of the divorce and something called an asset allocation. You're split between stocks and bonds, stocks being riskier, bonds being more stable. When you were married, maybe your risk profile is different. Maybe you need some of the money and liquidity, so you should take a step back, look at your portfolios, make sure they're aligned with your goals and your values. You want to just make sure that you have your health insurance, all your insurance coverage, and there's just and your estate plan. Make sure that you get that updated, that you update your beneficiaries and, you know, see a lawyer. You might need a new accountant. So there's almost a whole checklist of things when you get divorced. But if you do these things and you look at your budget and your expenses, you're going to be in good shape.
And people get divorced at different times and at different stages in life. And one area in which it could get especially complicated when dividing assets and possible impact on your financial well-being is the trend of gray divorce, where people split up in their 60s and 70s.
And we're seeing a big, big trend with that. First of all, you probably don't have to worry about custody of your children. So really, it's the financial side, and there's usually resources there. So making sure everything is divided up equally, who's going to pay if there's alimony, if there's things, you know, that do get paid. But gray divorce can be very complicated because you built this life together, you built these resources, you saved, and now it's split in half. So you may not have the resources that you thought you were going to have in your later life.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Join us this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, some good news for Thanksgiving road trippers.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Drivers filling up their gas tanks are feeling pretty good these days, especially with Thanksgiving just down the road. Let's get an update from Phil Flynn, senior market analyst for the Price Group in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. You know, the calendar clicked over from Halloween to Christmas on November 1st, but believe it or not, we do have Thanksgiving in just a couple of weeks, and it sounds like drivers will not experience any indigestion at the gas pump if they go on a road trip this Thanksgiving.
Now, yeah, unless they stop for some bad coffee or something, you'll be fine. No, you're absolutely right. We've seen the drop in gasoline prices, you know, across the country, even here, you know, in Chicago area, which you hardly ever see. And part of it is the switch over to the summer blends, lower crude oil prices. And we always, you know, national average, you know, trying to get below that elusive $3 a gallon is always a big thing for the economy. And so far, it's proved to be elusive. You know, we might get close, but we're not quite there. And I don't know if we're going to quite get there. We might go down a little bit, but national average, I don't think we're going to quite make it.
Now, what's interesting is that November is usually a weak month for gas consumption. And what is it about November that, you know, takes some of the pressure off of the gasoline market?
Well, we're no longer using the summer blends of gasoline. Kids are generally back in school, and the holiday days really haven't kicked into full gear yet, the travel season. So, you know, early in the season, people are getting prepared to travel for Thanksgiving, but they haven't hit the roads yet, so generally demand is down. But then you get that seasonal uptick in demand, right, where you go on a road trip. Now, in Illinois, if you want to pay below $3 a gallon, go on a road trip to Effingham, Illinois. That's where you can get gas below $3 a gallon. So if you want to see what that feels like, Chicago, go for a road trip. But yeah, I mean, when you do that this time of year, we get that dip in demand. But once the, you know, once the holidays kick in, you know, demand goes back up again.
2 years ago in the bad old days, shortly after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we were talking about, you know, gas touching $5 a gallon in some parts of the Chicago area. We were looking at just gasoline demand and where it's going down on the margins. And also the production was trying to normalize coming out of COVID-19. But it seems like most people working from home 2, maybe 3 days a week starting to make a real difference in daily gasoline consumption. And even though electric vehicle usage seems to have plateaued, that's kind of making a difference on the margins as well.
It has. I mean, there's no doubt that the growth in gasoline demand that we usually expected to see year after year has moderated a little bit, right? And yes, the electric vehicles have cut into that, you know, the changing work environment, right? But even though we've had that drop in demand growth, we're not that far from record highs for gasoline, right? And I think that sometimes people say, hey, you know, gas demand's probably going to peak out. You know, we're not going to have to worry about it. That's when you get into trouble, because all of a sudden, you know, if demand starts perking up, you know, next year you find that supplies are tight and you're back into worrying about $5 a gallon again.
Well, if the price of gas jumps in an appreciable way, Phil, blame me for opening my big fat mouth and talking about how gasoline demand is plateaued. So that'll be on me if it happens.
Rob, I'm not going to hold you responsible, but I will tell you this. During the holidays, to make up for it, I do want you to at least rent an electric car for at least one day.
All right. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst for the Price Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.